reading from the Jiva Dharma, Chapter 3. Omigana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Kaksuranmulitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sapadantikam Pancha Kalpa Tirubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayebhyascha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasade Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare So, readings from Govardhan. When did I return on? Oh yeah, it was Saturday. And I'm in my kutir, my bhajan kutir. many people come on pilgrimage and I tell them that I tell the story of Vidura in the Mahabharata, that he was a saintly and wise person, but he was caught in the middle of a fratricidal war. And even though he was faultless, his nephew Duryodhana accused him of siding with the other side and insulted him. And criticism is very, very, very heavy. You have to be very, very careful criticizing someone. I don't know where I got that statement, but there was that statement that criticism is worse than envy, because envy is when it's in the heart, and criticism when it's come out, and that criticism is worse than throwing a spear through someone's body, because the spear can only pierce the body, and criticism can pierce the heart. So heavy. So heavy. So hurtful. When one is criticized. But he was spiritual, and I'm sure he felt the pain, but he could understand that everything's under Krishna's arrangement, and the circumstance he was in of being criticized was only Krishna using someone's ignorance to give him a life experience that was really just delivering a message to him to bring him closer to God. And that's how a spiritual person views the world. He sees everything as bringing them closer to God. So he understood that it was a time of life. It was a time of life where he needed to devote himself exclusively to Krishna. And then he said, Tre Bratani Haritoshinani. What is pilgrimage? It's Tre Bratani Hari. It's a time where you vow everything is only for Krishna directly. Through Siddha Bhakta. Directly for Krishna. There's a rope, Vaishnava Bhakta, where we do activities for ourselves, and then somehow we kind of impose Krishna consciousness on that fruitive mentality by somehow connecting those activities to Krishna. But now, only direct activities for Krishna, and that's pilgrimage. And it's a very essential part of people's lives. I explain to people that there are times of the day that are just for Krishna. That's our sadhana. There are times of the month that are just for Krishna, Akadasis and holy days, holidays. Holy days, not holidays, holy days. Times of the year, pilgrimage. And of course, times of the life. At some time of one's life, one has to be afforded the dignity to just focus on God, just focus on Krishna. So pilgrimage, and I'm seeing so many people now coming on pilgrimage without even an understanding that it's for Krishna. But they're somehow coming on, on pilgrimage where they have to become absorbed. And even, you know, it's that recently Sridhar from Bhakti Fest came, and I've gotten to know him well. And he came with a pilgrimage group of 25, which I'm helping to host. And they're in Vrindavan, and they don't have the same, I think, or, you know, conception that we have in Gaudiya of Vaishnavism, but they're Vaishnavism. But somehow or other, I see that they're fully absorbed in meeting sadhus and going to a very disciplined program, going to holy places. They're at the Barsana today. Tomorrow they'll come and see me in Govardhan. And the concept is there, and it's somehow understood. Maybe not the same philosophical conceptions we have, but the concept is understood. That this pilgrimage is only for spiritual activities. So, I try to take this month only for Krishna. Direct meditation. But of course, I do try to accommodate people. I do try to accommodate people who come to me, and generally someone's visiting every day. But so we really have to get the taste in Krishna consciousness, we have to create these opportunities during the day for ourselves. Where really the meditation becomes exclusive, and we have to create these opportunities. And what a wonderful society Prabhupada has created. I remember years ago when I did the Panihati Festival upstate, I was doing it because there was no opportunities in the Northeast for that absorption. And basically, I don't do that festival anymore because why should I have to organize a festival when there's so many opportunities that are being organized, so many that people can't even come to them all. What a wonderful thing that Prabhupada has done for us. And it's beautiful because that community and society of devotees is always increasing. Now let's get to the Jiva Dharma. And I would say this is really for my serious students who really want to learn Tattva. Tattva means subjects of truth, subjects of reality. It's one reality, but it's understood in different ways. There's Shakti Tattva, the reality of reality's energies. There's Guru Tattva, the reality of reality's instructions. There's Bhagavan Tattva, the reality of reality's personality. There's Jiva Tattva, the reality of the reality's infinitesimal portions, which are receptacles of love. So there's so many tattvas. There's so many truths. And as you'll see, it's knowledge, but not exactly intellectual. It's more receptive hearing and God's reciprocation with knowledge. Esham satatiyukdhanam bhajitam pitti purvakam dadami buddhiyogam twam yenamam. One who is devoted to faith and love, I give him the knowledge by which one can come back to me. So it's an understanding. But if we do it in the right way, it strengthens our faith. And in any endeavor, we move forward by the level of our faith, not just the level of our intellectual understanding, the level of our conviction and understanding based on a certain experience of Krishna consciousness. And a certain understanding of Krishna consciousness that opens our heart to that experience. So it's important to understand tattvas, especially for serious students. And what to speak of people who are a little bit intellectually inclined and need to use that aspect of their psyche and nature in the most healthy and beneficial way. I love Jiva Dharma. I think it's brilliant in the Bhaktivinoda Thakur because it's an engaging story. It's so brilliant, which all the tattvas are described. We're going to go into a section now about Jiva Tattva. And then, in practically each chapter is a different tattva, which is represented by a particular person who needs to understand that tattva to have faith. Because if you don't understand a particular aspect of the Absolute Truth, a particular tattva, it will hamper your faith and therefore hamper your efforts and your devotion. So, Lahari Mahasai, we've been following his interesting journey of coming to Krishna consciousness from an aristocratic Brahmin family, which in that days had three strikes against it. It understood spirituality by caste. So the tattva of Nitya Dharma, what is the real religion, not just caste, has to be understood. And when someone say Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Okay, I have pretty good, in the next couple of months, I should have a pretty good technological setup. But now I need to... Okay, my computer is set up, so if I'm off and you don't hear me for a while, you can send a message. So, he needs to hear particular tattvas. He needs to be clear on particular subjects to go forward on Krishna consciousness. And... he has a guru, Vaishnav Das, and his doubts are being cleared one by one. And he needs to understand some Bandhagyan. That's the fundamental tattva. That's basic metaphysical knowledge, a basic conception of reality. And without an understanding of a basic conception of reality, it's hard to perform. You can't perform pure devotional service because you won't understand that there is God. And what devotional service means is Tvasmin Parama Prema Rup. It's the nature and form of the highest love to God. And bhakti requires a mutual exchange. So you have to understand the distinction between the soul, the body, and God, and their interrelationship. So, because Lahari Mahasai had impersonal conceptions of reality, but now, by the mercy of the Vaishnavas, he was developing a faith. And, you know, I can see that as I share Krishna consciousness in the yoga world, people develop a faith in bhakti, which ultimately will require some Bandhagyan to go further. What do I mean by that? They're innocent. And they're listening to kirtan, and they're listening to katha, and they're seeing the deities. And if knowledge is not opening their heart, then their innocence is opening their heart, or their liberality is opening their heart. But somehow or other, they're receptive to an experience of God. But eventually, without conceptualizing and understanding it deeply, or more deeply, it will be limited to how far they can nurture that experience. To the point of the highest experience of reality, which is called prema. Our highest experience of reality is our love for reality. Because when you understand reality and experience reality, you'll experience your relationship in relation to reality. So, his doubts are being cleared. First doubt is, then coming from a gyanic or impersonalist background, which moves so much on analytic discrimination and knowledge, and then coming to the path of bhakti, which is the yoga of devotion, one of the basic misconceptions one will have is that bhakti doesn't require a firm metaphysical understanding. So he asked him about that, and Babaji Maharaj explains that, no, you need to have some bandha. You need to have some understanding. And I said that before. if you think I am the body, and therefore think that you're the center of existence, how will you serve center of existence? And if you think you are God, why? If you think you're God, how can you serve the center of existence? How can you serve God if you think you're God? Self requires an object. An object means there is some duality, not absolute duality. Because everything is God's energies, but there are energies, and there are varieties of energies. For us, there's varieties of energies. Jadmad, yasya, yuton, vayad, itratas, tateshu, figyat, God is he whom everything else is coming from. God must exist as an object. Which is encompassing reality, and it's within reality. For the purpose of love and service. You have to understand that. And if you don't understand the relationship between God and matter, and you think God is matter, why should you worship God? He explains. I just got a message that we got cut off, but it said 18:18, so the message came a little bit late. But just confirm that you can still hear me.
Yes, Maharaj, we can hear you now.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. So he explains to Vadi Mahasai that you need to understand this sambandha tattva, relationship of God and his energies, which is his relationship with matter and his relationship with the living entity. So Vadi Mahasai, he's a little confused, and he raises the classic doubt that if Bhagavan has form, and form is limited by spatial considerations, how can Bhagavan be the resting place of the limitless and all-pervading Brahma? I'm just going to read again the very brilliant answer that Babaji Maharaj gave to this. He said, in the material world, the living entity known as the sky is also limitless. Why should Brahman be considered more important? Merely because it is limitless. Beautiful. Limitless does not mean absolute. It's an aspect of the absolute. And Bhagavan is also limitless by virtue of potency manifested from the effulgence of his limbs. So Bhagavan, the form of God, it's also limitless. But it's more than just limitless. At the same time, he possesses his own transcendental form. And to deny that is denying the is limiting God. Can any other entity compare with this? It is because of this unparalleled nature that Bhagavan is superior to the principle of Brahman. So the principle of being limitless and having a transcendental form is more limitless. I don't know if the word. It's less limited. It's unlimited. It's limiting to just say that God is limitless. It is limiting to just say that God is limitless. His transcendental form is supremely attractive, and that self-same form is fully and completely all-pervasive, omniscient, omnipotent, unlimitedly merciful, and supremely blissful, which is superior. A form such as this, which is endowed with all qualities, or an obscure, all-pervading existence, which is devoid of qualities and potencies. In reality, Brahman is only a partial, impersonal manifestation of Bhagavan. The impersonal and personal features both exist simultaneously and in perfect harmony in Bhagavan. So you have to understand Bhagavan Tattva. Now, he'll explain more, and usually I don't read, but I think this is so engaging that I'm able to do it. Brahman is only one aspect of Bhagavan. Those whose spiritual intelligence is limited are attracted to the feature of the Supreme that is devoid of qualities and is formless, immutable, unknowable, and immeasurable. So if your spiritual intelligence is limited, limited by what? By our experience in this material world, which denies inconceivable potency. If we ascribe our experience in this world to the absolute truth, then our understanding of the absolute truth will be limited, because this material world, by definition, works under the laws of cause and effect. By definition, God is above the laws of cause and effect. But God is not subject to space. God is not subject to time. And therefore, looking at God through the lens of logic, which is based on cause and effect, will not be able to understand God deeply, because he's above the laws of nature. Tarejati, tadnaijati, tadure, tadvantike, tarantarasya sarvasya, tarutava. God walks, he doesn't walk, he's near and he's far as well. Vaishnavas have no significant faith in Sri Hari's formless and personal feature, for it is opposed to their eternal function unalloyed prema. So those who are Vaishnavas, they will not limit their conception of the absolute truth to an amorphous energy, because it's opposed to the conception of love. It's opposed to the conception of love. Love requires a mutual exchange. Bhagavan Sri Krishna Chandra is the basis of both the personal and impersonal features. He is an ocean of supreme transcendental bliss, and he attracts all pure jivas. Bahari, how can Sri Krishna's form be eternal since he takes birth, performs activities, and gives up his body? Wow. These type of people are not only existing now, they're existing since time immemorial. Babaji, Sri Krishna's form is is Satchitananda ever existing, full of knowledge and completely blissful. His birth activities and leaving the body have no connection with mundane matter. So if God is eternal or ever existing, and full of awareness by definition, and completely blissful, then the things he does are not of this world. And therefore, because he does them, you cannot designate it in this world. If God takes birth, and he's full of knowledge and transcendental, it's not a birth of ignorance, and it's not a time in history. It's his eternal function. It's part of his completeness for the purpose of pleasure and love. And therefore, the way this world moves, in some ways, is a reflection of God. It's not that God is a reflection of how the world is here. It's not anthropomorphic. The conception is this world is a reflection of some kind of reality. Love is the guiding principle of this world. If it exists here, why should it not be an eternal reality, even if it's perverted here? So that's the question. Lahari, then why have such descriptions been given in Mahabharata and other shastras? So he's saying, then why has God been described in a way in other shastras that it seems that you know, he has no form, he has no this, he has no that. Why do we see in the shastras conceptions and forms, conceptions and ideas, Bahari is saying, in Mahabharata and even other shastras, which seem to confirm that God is beyond birth, activities, death, or leaving the body and all these things. So Babaji very, very carefully answers this, and I think we can finish today's chinks by discussing this. And then next week we discuss Jiva Tattva. He said, the eternal truth defies descriptions, for it is beyond words. Now this is a problem, so how are you describing it? Beyond words, because it's beyond our experience. Very interesting point. Words can't describe an experience that you don't have. It's like trying to describe sex desire to a child. If he does not yet have that experience, words alone cannot describe it to the child. It's not that words can't describe that experience, but the full understanding of this experience requires some frame of reference. So really what some experience. Words basically can only tell you what the absolute truth is not, because that is within your experience. It's a common example, but of the person who is born on an island who only has the five tastes of hot, unction, spicy, salty, and sour, and has never tasted anything sweet, and then goes to the mainland, and he goes to the mainland, and he's gets something sweet. Now he goes back to the island and tries to explain that. But because the people on the island don't have a frame of reference, he can only describe it as, well, what is it? What did you taste like? And he says, well, it's not salty, it's not sour, it's not sweet, it's not bitter, it's not hot. And I keep on saying that. He keeps on repeating, it's not hot, it's not bitter, it's not salty, it's not sweet. It's not pungent. So he keeps on explaining that because they don't have a frame of reference. So therefore, to understand the absolute truth and understand the descriptions of the absolute truth, it must be preceded by some basic experience. So he says the pure soul in his spiritual aspect sees the transcendental form and pastimes of Sri Krishna. But when he describes that supreme reality in words, it appears just like a mundane history, a worldly mundane history, because that's one's experience of form. They don't have an experience other than mundane form. So when you explain these things to people who don't yet have faith, don't have some experience, words are not sufficient. Ability of the conception, I don't try to prove the conception. But I know by explaining the reasonability of the conception and the faith people get from that reasonability allows them to open their hearts to the experience. Those who are eligible to extract the essence of the Shastra, such as the Mahabharata, experience Krishna's pastimes as they are. So when there's some faith and you hear the descriptions of those pastimes, you actually experience those pastimes, the reality of them. However, when people of mundane intelligence hear these descriptions, they interpret them in different ways. The Hari. When one meditates on the form of Sri Krishna, the conception that arises in the heart is limited by time and space. How can one transcend such limitations and meditate on Krishna's actual form? Babaji, meditation is an action of the mind. And as long as the mind is not fully spiritualized, one meditation cannot be spiritual. And when one meditates with the mind that has become purified in that way, such meditation certainly becomes chinmayi. When Bhajan Anandi Vaishnavas chant Krishna's name, the material world cannot touch them because they are chinmayi. Internally, they are situated in the spiritual world as they meditate on Krishna's pastimes and relish the bliss of confidential service. Lahari, please be merciful and grant me such spiritual realization. Chit Anubhav. Babaji, when you abandon all material doubts and logic and constantly apply yourself to Sri Nam, spiritual realization will quickly arise within you of its own accord. So when you stop trying to understand it simply through the material intelligence, but through the material intelligence, have opened your faith and possibilities to the experience, and then you experience God through the holy name, and you'll get this spiritual realization. The more you resort to mundane logic, the more you will subjugate your mind to material bondage. The more you strive to initiate the flow of Nam-Ras, the more your material shackles will be loosened. The spiritual dimension will then manifest in your heart. Lahari, please be merciful and explain what the spiritual experience is. Babaji, the mind is brought to a standstill when it tries to understand the truth through words. The truth can be realized only through culture and spiritual bliss. Give up all argumentation and simply chant Sri Nam for several days. Then the power of Nam will automatically dispel all your doubts, and you will not have to inquire further from anyone in this regard. Lahari Masa, I have understood that one obtains supreme spiritual benefit by drinking the liquid rasa of Sri Krishna Nam with great faith. So I will chant Sri Nam when I have understood Sambandhat Gyan clearly. Babaji, that is the best way. You must have a sound understanding of Sambandhat Gyan. Lahari, Bhagavat Tattva has now become clear to me. Bhagavan is the one supreme absolute truth, and Brahman and Paramatma are subordinate to him. Although all-pervading, Sri Bhagavan resides in the spiritual world in his unique transcendental form, which possesses all potencies and is the supreme person of concentrated existence, knowledge, and bliss. Although the master of all potencies, he always remains completely entranced in exuberant association with his pleasure-giving potency, Ladini Shakti. Now kindly instruct me about Jiva Tattva. Okay, any questions?
Only about a million, Maharaj. I said only about a million. No, it just actually is a handful, but it's so nice. You know, every
Wait, 1 second. What did you say?
I was saying, yeah, I do have a handful,
yeah.
But it's nice that every once in a while your lectures, you know, by Krishna's arrangement, they're exactly what I've been meditating on, you know, giving me the opportunity to ask. Like today, I so badly want to understand how it is that the pure self-realized souls, how do they perceive this amorphous energy that we call the Brahman aspect of Krishna, because I have some conception of Paramatma aspect, some conception of Bhagavan aspect, but, you know, to get some kind of tangible conception of what, how you perceive Brahman.
Okay. So you want to ask a question, or that was
that is my question. What is, you know, I don't have a conception of, I know we say amorphous energy, Brahman, but, you know, in other words, I don't have a conception of how a pure devotee or a self-realized soul perceives that Brahman aspect of Krishna.
I don't have a conception how anyone experiences it, because it's without any conceptions.
Yeah.
Brahman is without any conceptions. I would say it's something like deep sleep. You remember it, but you... That's the only...
You said you remember it, but what?
Yeah, I can give it. You remember deep sleep. I had a deep sleep. It's one of the states of the mind, deep sleep.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Deep sleep is compared sometimes to Brahman realization. It was like peaceful, but there's no way you can describe it.
Oh, yeah, you're like, you know something was there, but you just can't, like you said, describe it.
Yeah, yeah. So sometimes it's described like deep sleep.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay. Because I've heard also, like, it's like Krishna in the form of existence, which also, I don't know.
Yeah. Something like that.
Anyway, I also wanted to ask, when you were saying, you know, again, back to this question, you know, when you were discussing Sambandh again, and you say, if you think... Krishna is matter. You know, why would you worship? Why would you worship, you know, something that's matter just like you, you know? But we do see that people do find matter worshipable. So it's like it doesn't preclude a person's worship, you know, the conception that Krishna is matter. Maharaj? Oh.
You know about Gail?
Yes.
Gail?
Yes.
Happen?
Huh?
The phone is to my ear, and my ear pressed the mute button.
Oh.
That's what
okay.
Happened.
Should I repeat?
Okay.
Or is there not enough time?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's true. That when you can see something is greater, but at the same time, if you think it's material, you also think it's temporary. So there's a limit to your faith. Also, there's a reason why you would worship it. It's greater than me, but there's also a reason why you won't worship it. It's just temporary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you can worship matter, but it just won't last. The worship just won't last.
Right,
that's
right.
The problem.
You know, there's a reason to worship it, and there's a reason not to worship it.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly to give your life to something that's just temporary.
Yeah.
And therefore not supreme is a very limited concept. Yeah. Okay.
Am I out of time, Maharaj? I do. Huh?
Okay, one more. Okay, one
yeah,
more.
Yeah, that's all I have is one more. You were saying that, you know, that Brahmana, that caste Brahmana, there was three strikes against him, you know, for the Brahmanas of his time. You know, one, I think, was a, you know, their attachment to the impersonal aspect of Krishna. Another was their attachment to, I think, maybe Naimittika Dharma, maybe, right? The, you know, the caste.
Well, let me see, you know, because, you know, it's interesting. All the things, I'm going to joke, all the things that I make up with my creative intelligence are the things that you question. Not what I read someplace.
Well, that's tradition, Maharaj.
Like
that's our tradition.
Well, no, it's good, but the when I was thinking like this, when I was came with, you know, the Brahmin, and he had impersonal conceptions, right? He had caste conceptions, right? And then, you know, the caste conception was that's what spirituality is. I am Brahmin. And the third thing I was thinking that it's a certain pride. You know, three strikes against you, aristocracy. I am better than others. You know? So it's kind of the same. Like, I'm a Brahmin, I'm better than the others. But also, it was the misconception that, you know, that this is what the eternal Dharma is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my formidable activities is what the eternal Dharma is. And my smart, the Brahminism. Okay?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. This is Brajaraja Devdas.
Thank you so much for listening always to the classes. These are my close students that listen to these classes. And then I feel confident that they're learning Krishna consciousness and they can advance. Okay, thank you. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, we're going to end now because it's early in the morning here. Once you call up to the Dushaka, to see the baby.